That's right. Interrupting the current neo-colonial cricketism to bring you Behind the Woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 387. Hey, folks, never forget. Well, this has been a big topic I kind of noticed, partly. With the world's freedom collapsing at free fall speed, how long are you all going to fixate? I don't know how many people I've been watching bringing up the towers over and over. They're all on to you, folks. They're on to COVID-19 now. I told you this. Each one of you had almost 20 years now to figure all this out to stop it. As I mentioned, coming into the year, they were going to trigger the next phase. I deemed it Op Hindsight 2020. Never forget. It's your obligation to get you behind the woodshed, or you get what silence deserves. I don't know how much more I can press this point. It's not my rule. It's the way this place was wired. They were waiting for you to keep the Republic, and when you didn't, they stomped on you. They're actually bringing us together globally like they needed to. And I have, interestingly, how things work out. I'll be getting to some of that, how that's being, how you can see this happening on the world stage. And partly it may be what we're dealing with as well with this COVID and analyzing what's going on, what they're not disclosing. But I also want to notice lots of people saying resist. It's not resisting to say resist, folks. You just can't talk. And if you didn't have another thought, get you behind the woodshed and learn you a thing or two. This is what I'm trying to tell you here, giving you tools to bring out and defend yourself against. I can't see how it's turning from where the future they want, folks. It's just what they've been telling us, and it's in there. And I told you long ago, they build the laws in before they even get there, and then they just implement those laws and codes. Like I said, we're going to get to a couple of those, and real quickly here before maybe you might run off because you're not interested no more. Those of you that I hope are listening still and will, and are trying to work out how you're going to make at least your letter, which I haven't even seen many people want to do. Just a letter, one sentence, one demand question, if I can call it a combination. One letter, one citation to a law that was failed, and a demand for the evidence of the failed duty will get you the beginnings of your ability to counter all this nonsense. And yet, I hear not much. Again, crickets. And so we're going to touch a bit of this, how it's all this really is integrated more globally. Yeah, but first, I want to touch a couple things that are also, it all seems to be integrated with a condition, and everybody wants to talk about everything else but what's really going on. I don't know, really, I think I'm kind of amazed at how centrally located I am relative to my studies and how I was put in the place I am to understand how this works and see it. Not just to talk about it. I'm not the best at talking about it, necessarily, about this thing, sustainability, these things. We see the goal, the future we want, Agenda 2030. I tell you about them, but I hear people that can really, really lay it out nicely. That's not what I'm here for. I'm here to tell you, there it is. You can prove it to yourself quickly, and this is in your life. This is encroached inside your system. Everyone, everywhere where there's rule, oh law, democracy, and democracy, the brand that the professions union called the Bar Association has gotten to go across the world. If no one didn't understand a global conspiracy, there's one right there that everyone seems to disregard. And we'll have more connections. It's all integrated at some point. But what you're hearing right now and what we're dealing with, we went from 100 degree temperatures to 50. In our smoke-caused nuclear winter, that now governors are coming out on cue, folks. They're on cue to tell you that global warming is causing these fires all over the West. So I just want to point out something to you, because I've been dealing right with this. It's what our lawsuit was about in 2013. It's on the website of Jefferson Mining District on the consensus policy side. These people are there. They have a plan. They follow a method. They're a parasitic amoeba. They get inside. They're a cancer inside your system. You don't even know they're there. You think you know they're there, but you don't even know how or why or what continues them. You think if you keep beating on the branches that you're going to, when you knock a few leaves off the branches, that you've taken care of the organism that's inside that, what you call a government, a state. The Bar Association is another one of these public-private connections, actually an agency of your government. People don't get the quality of this problem. But you hear governors say claiming climate change now on these fires. Any governor claiming climate change relative to these fires, that they're caused by climate change, are actually now admitting arsonists coupled with the governor's let it burn policies against proper forest management is called climate change. It's called global warming. When you look at the truth of what's going on, and predictably they blame this on climate change, it's when you look at what they're doing, their let it burn policies are what is allowing, their lack of harvest policies are what is allowing your forests to burn. In other words, their attack on your production, which is the foundation of the wealth of a society, is what is causing this problem. Now, certainly that's not an absolute. There are things that aren't necessarily caused, but the fact that they're not properly managing the forests to a proper growth density is what's causing this. And the only real way to start getting down it is actually harvesting. You'll notice in most places there's not even mills now to address this. So this was the future they wanted. They've gotten it, and it's going to take a concerted effort. Otherwise, you're going to see more of this problem, and they're going to keep blaming it on the climate change, which refortifies their fraud against y'all. And there's an easy way to step into it. And if you just would focus in on one thing that interests you to stop, and then you write your letter, you start in by starting to understand how you approach this. A simple letter begins the process. So I don't know more to say. This is all has the same tentacles. No matter where you go, it goes back to the same parasitic body. And it is all defeatable at the point that you turn your attention to that and not buildings falling almost 20 years ago. That was the notice to you. They said America changed. I think I tweeted this out. What didn't change since the last 20 years is the crickets. So I don't know what more to add. I just keep bringing the tools. Right now we've got the worst. I told you it was coming. It did. I've now been addressing how. We now find out, and I'll get to the links here. Now attorneys are realizing what they needed to be doing all along. It's pretty fascinating. I've been telling you what to do since I can't remember now exactly when, January, February, relative to your private restraint and your voluntary quarantine and stopping it, and then the extensions that are coming as mitigations. I've been talking to you, telling you all about it now. Now the attorneys are coming around. I don't get that. So we're talking about dethroning the sovereign. And if you realize that in the United States of America anyway, and this is the distinction I'm noticing, is thoughts that come to my mind as I see new stuff. As I was thinking about what I'm going to be talking about what might be underlying these governor's orders, why we see no local determinations for infectious agent, it occurred to me the United States has, we were told and we are told, and if you look at what the United States was, they tried to do with the United States, and they did in large part, it's really different. It's different than any other nation. It really is. It really can't be in the UN. It can't be integrating with the UN. And I'm going to show you a little bit of evidence about that. How all the nations think that the UN should drop its organization in order to capitulate and bring themselves into consensus on the global stage, which it's not equal to. And so this is just an interesting insight for me, just to see there is a distinction in the United States of America. And the people have to step up into that, because that's been stolen. You had a republic if you could keep it. It's been stolen. You didn't keep it. And that's where we are today. In other words, it was stolen. You were supposed to have the obligation to keep it. If you didn't, don't complain. Now, you should complain, but I'm saying let's clear the room here. Get rid of everybody that's just going to complain. And I suspect, and I've said this early on this year, I suspect there's not going to be many people in that room. I don't know why. Not that we're not talking judging people for good or bad. We're saying there's an intention that you have to hold. And it just isn't in the people much anymore. I think it's there. I think it's latent there. We tend to act out about it. But we want to start getting more into my thoughts about this. Then, anyway, we're maybe that's the title of the broadcast, Dethroning the Sovereign. In the United States, the distinction was there was a limited form of government. Agents came in to expand that into more of an administrative condition, and then they did it again internationally. They went outside even administrative, and then it becomes what we find out is adjunct policy. It's this foreign imposition that is adopted inside, it's functioning inside, comes through executive execution inside when it's really not the law. Now, we were to keep that from happening to us as people. And so you're going to see a very interesting thing happen. I get there here real soon, but I do want to address one observation on UCY.TV YouTube. And again, thank you, Jules, for allowing us to broadcast, simulcast on UCY.TV still. The Ghost in the Machine. The comment came through YouTube, though, from H. Thomas Ackerman, and I think it was the last broadcast, saying where I was talking about what do you write in your letters and how you do your habeas corpus. More information on how you do that. You got two angles you can start to work from to get yourself familiarized on how to start a record. I think I'm still seeing you've got to preload the record before you actually act, and if you don't, you're able to be cut out of the herd, if you will, and pointed out to be a troublemaker. Once you make your record on the dereliction of the official to follow an objective black and white basis, which is that black and white I tell you to go to. When you find that, now you're on a different, you have a different record made. There's a different proof. You're also in an administrative capacity where they can't do much to you until they solve that. And if they do, then now you start to develop the things of willfulness and knowing and all these other adjectives they put on in the codes that show liability. They throw them outside of their good faith condition, which they are presumed as a sovereign's agent. Now, I hear lots of people talk about this, but you kind of give lip service to the application. And then it came down to the point, there's very few of us that speak in this regard, if anybody, other than myself, because I look around, I just don't hear people speaking like this, to apply what that is, not because you know that that's it, that's the point, but that there's a dynamic that you're speaking into, and speak that way. Again, you have the rights that you assert. You're your sovereign, if you want to go this way. You're your own sovereign when you act like one, when you assert things like, when you demand the way you're supposed to. That you are demanding into a corruption is not an excuse to not, is the other point. But H. Thomas Ackerman made a comment and asked the question relative to last week where I'm talking more about your letters and your habeas. Remember now, I started with the more complicated, which was the habeas, and then we kind of broached things like, well, the things in equity, the writs, generally. I just touched on those. And H. Thomas Ackerman, I'm not sure how long you've been listening to the broadcast, but the question is, why don't you bring a lawsuit against the government in the way a Canadian lawyer has done? He provides a link. There's I think his name's Rocco. That's his first name. Galati, I think it might be his second name, is a constitutional lawyer up in Kanuckistan, and he's making a complaint. He's written to one complaint, and he's suing the three provinces, the three jurisdictions, on COVID, and he's making his stand, and he's arguing the petition, and I only had a short time to read it, but to answer your question, Thomas, I have been. It's exactly what I've been explaining. What he put in his complaint is what I've been saying is number three in his complaint. I've said make that number one. I've also said you don't need 191 pages to explain that if you get number three, his number three is my number one, you don't have to talk about mitigation members. They're all irrational. They're all illogical. They're all unsupported. They're all unjust. He's right. You go read his document. But that's what I've been saying. I almost had to laugh, not at you, but I had to laugh. That's all what I've been saying. And so we have a lawyer up in Kanuckistan who may be pressing the argument. I don't know. His one statement, and I didn't go read the law, that apparently their orders don't follow the statute for an emergency or an epidemic, just like I've been telling you, look in your state law. So this is a universal thing, which is another point I wanted to make about this. This is the rule of law and democracy moving through the various functionaries to implement a global or a plan, which makes this new order, this new normal. And yet the states were supposed to be separate. Now, in Kanuckistan, there is laws that ought to have made it separate, and it's consistent. So in this regard, why I can jump and look down in Australia, and I can find your very same savings provisions, or at least demands that you can make, or show that there is no good faith, take away their reliance, take away their reasonableness, because they never claimed any, it's all the same standard. So in a way, I'm fortified to hear there's a lawyer that's speaking at least at one point the way I would, what I've been saying. So I have been saying to do what he's done. Now, to specifically, when you say you, and you're talking to me, I'm not an attorney. I'm not a lawyer. I cannot represent anything or anyone. And you'll notice his paperwork does. I can't do that. I can only get you to understand each one of you has your own power to write your own paperwork and defend yourself. You don't need a lawyer or an attorney to tell you. It's always nice when someone in law can guide the way, but there hasn't been so many, if you've noticed. And so I've been advocating our own defense, and not necessarily that it's not against the corruption, but that at least you start the processes that give you some measure of protection between what's coming down on you, the immediacy of what's coming down, and your ability to address it, and not accept, even by your complaining, not accept what they're doing, and make a record for others to see that you're not defenseless. And so, and partly, I started to laugh a bit. H. Thomas Ackerman, I've been saying exactly what his lawsuit is about, at least at number three, because to me, that's the first step. If they can't fulfill the first duty and obligation, they don't have an authority to do the rest. And you can, 191 pages he's come up with. Fantastic. If for those of you that want to go in there and you have to do the mitigation stuff because you can't, or the court won't recognize that there's no authority, and I'm going to touch that to why that might be. We're moving right into this reflexive law technology that they've imposed upon us with this incremental encroachment invasion. And so we got everything I've ever talked to you about is coming to a head here, and I hope you've been paying attention, because it's going to be, again, it's still a race, a foot race. I don't know who's going to cross that finish line. They're looking like they beat us, but I don't think so. So I can't do a lawsuit. Not for y'all. You each have to do that for yourself, and you're obligated to. I've talked to you through the habeas. We'll find out that those are viable. There are more evidence. Even if you're a criminal, you got them. So that was the important, interesting there. So thank you for the comment. Yes, look at the Canadian lawyer's work. I would say that I think it's his 1.3, his 0.3, his third insertion where he says that they didn't follow a certain code, I think 7 something. That's probably where his duties and obligations are, that he's commenting that the government never did. That's exactly what I've been saying you have to bring forward. Now, there's going to be this week's study, something came up through an emailer saying, here's something you might find important. Here's some nuggets in this information. And while the exercise point is important, it wasn't more important than the first few minutes somebody said that a foreign regulation, an international regulation, was binding in the matter of health emergencies. I hadn't heard that that was the case, and so that took a whole day of research to do that. Why? Because and we'll talk about this in a moment, it matters about your paperwork. It matters about potentially, not necessarily your first letters, but when you get into more of a judicial condition, it will matter to refute the presumption of that foreign law's binding nature. All right? So let me get to that first. Before something else, I keep jumping by, but it's very important. Again, we're talking about your right of redress. We're talking about, if you're in the United States of America underneath the federal constitution, your right to redress and the freedom of the press and the freedom to collect information and be that press if you want. And this story has been going on for a little while. I didn't touch it. I didn't hear many people talking about it. Not that I get out much, but it's important, even though you may not have heard about it. WikiLeaks wins motion to dismiss in Democratic National Committee lawsuit in important First Amendment decision. And so remember, this is WikiLeaks tying over to Assange and his extradition hearing now. I don't know if I've heard this case being played on to his extradition hearing, which just started. I don't talk about this so much. I'm pretty much given up. I've sent some information out to a couple people that seem influential. I would hope that we would have gotten into a dialogue over what I'm seeing as a failure on the attorney side. I went through that in one of the broadcasts. I said, there's some things they're not doing that they ought to be doing. Why aren't they doing them? To challenge that system, really put the pressure on that judicial system, which looks like it's a bot. So that's the appearance of impropriety problem on its own. So the point is, I get no response. No one really listens to the guy behind the woodshed. on important things, it seems, or tells me that they're not important. That's the other thing I would expect. In my life, when you talk with people, they would just, you know, everyone's honest enough and look in space, you know, that's a little, that ain't supportable, and here's how. And they would have a, if that was the case, they would tell you a good reason why it wasn't supportable. They'd at least communicate that. That's no longer the case in real life, and so I don't really have a, there's no tangibility to this social media stuff for me. It's really, you talk, you make a question, and all of a sudden it's like void. You answer a question, there's a void. You offer a suggestion that you want to help, and people just don't even pay attention to it. Okay, maybe it's not help, but let me know that. Guide me by what will help or not, if I have something to offer. And I'm asking that in the context of all of us. We don't communicate like that anymore. I'm used to communicating like that. I'm used to communicating with people to resolve things if they're problems, or you have a good time. You even communicate how good a time you're having. We don't do that interaction anymore. And that's a lot foreign to me. And certainly, I guess, as I get longer in the tooth, it's going to be more of a problem. I don't know. But WikiLeaks wins their motion to dismiss in a court case, and based what they're claiming on the First Amendment. This is important because of the way the corruption in the system works and the bar associations, the rule of law and democracy, and how they kind of work this out, and maybe underlying what they've done to you since 9/11 and all these other things they brought in, that you can be, you know, what we say, indefinitely detained. And then the politics as well, on top of all this, someone hates the guy. And to me, I just want justice. I don't know about all this, but this case is very important to say WikiLeaks is a publisher. WikiLeaks' motion to dismiss says it was supported in what it does, which means its editor, I think if Assange was that, may have a whole lot more protection than what I've been watching going on in the courts of England and or Britain. Which one? I don't insult anybody. Which one? England or Britain? Whatever the Crown courts are doing. The attorneys, which are also in the court and bar association, are not doing some of the arguments. If they're arguments, I would be asserting the defenses in the point of asserting collateral attacks, because they're there to do. And I don't hear any of this stuff done. And so you would say, well, who am I? You just said you're not an attorney or lawyer. Well, I'm not, but there's these attorneys and lawyers don't know necessarily. They're either in on it, they're bought, or they don't know. And I was surprised early on to find out they don't know, like in particular land law. And then particularly mining law, where they're not trained in mining law. There's not even purpose for it, because they're all administratively focused. Well, if they go administratively focused, your property rights are toast. And so the only one to assert those is you, anyone that has it. And so anyway, there's been in my life, in my study, in my observation, in my experience, there's a big chasm between law and legal, you know, how it gets done. And the law kind of sits there in the writs, which is actually treated through an equity court. And so it's kind of an interesting topsy-turvy issue. But you can't fight that. That's the way it is. If you understand that, stop trying to fight. You don't have to spend all your energy on actually implementing how it works, understanding it better. But this thing, you have the right to the press. You have the right to be a press. You have the right to the First Amendment here, as they're arguing in the United States against a suit. And then I want to point out the Secretary of State's in on this as well. This all comes into the COVID thing, how the tentacles worked. That, and again, this is a guy that said that we're told not to, but we lie, cheat, and stole as we move this thing along, being a CIA dude. And so don't underestimate this conniction that never goes away, it seems. But this story where WikiLeaks wins its motion to dismiss, this is a motion right up front before you actually move into the case, into the trial, and they win right there off the front. And this is stated by the author here. In 2017, Mike Pompeo, the then director of the CIA and now the U.S. Secretary of State, claimed WikiLeaks was a hostile non-state intelligence agency, and that Julian Assange should not benefit from First Amendment protections. The decision in the DNC suit demonstrates this is incorrect. This is also relevant in relation to the U.S. attempts to prosecute and extradite Mr. Assange. Interjection here, I haven't heard that reflected yet, so let's pay attention to that. These are the sorts of things I was saying. There's collateral attacks that they should be doing back in England, and I got crickets back on all this, and no action, so it wasn't even like they forgot to talk to me, but they did it anyway. There's none of this stuff. Anyway, we go on to here. Ms. Robinson said, quote, our motion to dismiss asserted long-standing First Amendment principles that protect the media's ability to publish information in the public interest. This decision affirms that right, and that WikiLeaks benefits equally from constitutional protection under the First Amendment, close quote. The DNC had alleged that there was a, quote, circumstantial evidence, close quote, that the WikiLeaks collaborated with the Trump campaign in WikiLeaks published activities. The DNC, I guess that's the Democratic National Committee, the Democrats, their political party. The DNC also brought claims under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, Racketeering Influence and Corrupt Organizations, or RICO Act, Wiretap Act. Now, wiretap is how you bring the RICO. You have to have some sort of the word just slipped from my mind. It's a prerequisite. That's not the word, but the prerequisite act. Similar to that word, I think. Four, and it's wiretapping is one. You only have three or four. A mail is another. So you have to go through that route to get racketeering, the RICO Act. So those of you looking at that and doing elements, you're going to have to tie those in. A lot of times that's not necessarily available. Getting back to the report here, the authorship, Wiretap Act, the Stored Communications Act, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and laws protecting trade secrets. Now, if you look at those are pretty fascinating things to approach a publisher, a press, if you will. I just put in the words press. And so understand the scope of their complaint and understand what ends up happening despite the scope of that. As you may look in the future to see a bunch of charges come at you, again, it's just a bunch of the smoke and mirrors. And you have to be able to sit calmly to look through that. But the DNC is going on. The DNC arguments were dismissed as moot or without merit. The suit was dismissed with prejudice, meaning the DNC cannot refile. So there's you have a right to speak, you have a right to gather your information. You set yourself up. The way this place is wired, folks, is you set yourself up. However, you don't like to do that. It's best to set yourself up the way you're supposed to appear and operate through that than to try and go it alone when you don't have to. And when you do, then you get to have these sorts of protections. Or you have to argue your life value in the face of the limits of the First Amendment. And if you look at those as limits, you'll realize if you're not doing those things in the First Amendment, essentially, what else do you have? It's not been given to you unless you understand antecedent powers and limitations of government and the Bar Association members, the globalists in black and robes, will allow that and extend that to you. And so we don't have a republic, again, that we were supposed to keep. It's kind of gone out of us. It's there, but it's not really been kept. So anyway, very powerful, important story. I haven't heard it come out with the Assange thing. I don't know where they just restarted that trial. Again, that, you know, get the machine fired up. I don't know when this will be a part of it. But we also hear that judge back there is already doing what I would consider to be real unjust kind of thing. So, but that's an opinion that I don't know what more to say. I get no reflection, so it's just looking in and saying, you know, that just doesn't look fair. That doesn't look just. And then the attorneys haven't long time ago thrown this the very same thing in before and made it an issue. And just like I told you, every attorney so far, maybe short of the new Mr. Gulati up in Kanukistan, short of actually stating that the orders are not based on the law that required certain things be determined. So that's the thing. Again, I was happy to see someone finally stepped up. Finally, folks, after how many months? Although 191 pages almost buries that, still, it's brought up. That's where you start. That's the first violation. That's the first thing, the obligation and duty that was required to be able to invoke the power they have keeping you quarantined and or masked and or distanced and or vaccined here coming soon because of a global order that sits there that they're all secretly complying with. And let's move over on into a little bit of the COVID now. Importantly, Stella Emanuel, the MD out of Houston, I think they were called the frontline doctors that I have seen just disappear. She was the black woman, and that's only to identify her, not to highlight anything here, because there was lots of women that stepped forward to say something, but she was the one that just lays it out about the hydroxychloroquine. She had made the statement that about 350 people she had helped and so-called cured them. Then she said it does cure, and she says it is a prophylactic, but she expanded on the limitations and when it's to be used, which is really quickly, and she laid it out. Well, she was, someone complained against her like we thought would happen, and she posted a tweet. It says, the Texas Medical Board dismisses the complaint against me. The haters have defeated, and God has showed himself as my protector and defender. God bless TMB. God bless Texas. God bless America. Good will win. America will win. And so, again, limited to what she was doing within her medical license, you see what they're subject to. A board, no less, looked at a complaint and found it dismissed it as well. There's certain things that she was doing that was correct. I'm not going to highlight and promote that. I'm saying that as a doctor with privacy to her patients, she told us that she used that chemical that has been foreboden because in the system, and that was improper. She came out to say that. And the right of a free expression apparently helps there. But a complaint against her based in this thing, which she doesn't explain, I assume it was based in this because she didn't have one before she spoke, has now exonerated a complaint, her against a complaint, dismissed it. Okay? So, not again, this is not to prove, not to promote anything. This is to say the doctors operating within a constraint. And I told you about the FDA, and I told you about the CDC discussion and those documents I put in the Blogcaster weeks and weeks ago, I think now, that there was no thing they decided on these extra medical ideas. They don't have an opinion. And I told you within that, the doctors have free rein. They also have the ability to do what off-label uses, as long as they can justify it. And so I didn't see how any complaint could go and that they were wrong, and yet you watch social media, the CIA and governmental controlled and the agenda controlled media that you've tapped into, absolutely wipe them from the face of the earth and condemn these people. And it's all, to me, it ends up being, you have a right of privacy between you and your doctor and your reliance on their expertise, that's your choice, in order to get care. And nobody outside of that has a say. And yet you see the global pressure to defeat that. And yet inside the United States, inside of Texas, inside of the board system, inside that their review, there is a right. There's an ability for those doctors to do that. And so this is the tug of war that's going on in my mind. And it leads us to where I'm going here, showing you there's supposedly international binding regulation that it looks like every government in the world that's tied in, including the United States and every state governor, is not telling you is going on, and I'm surmising that. It's an opinion based on what they've omitted in those orders that keeps you quarantined and controlled. It's omitted, and what they then say inside there in preference to things that the statute, local statute says, is what I'm going to move on here as we move farther on. I have despite that most of the governors, well, all the governors have not declared the infectious agent. None of their public health authorities have, as required by law. As I believe the Mr. Galati's claim up in Canada states, I think it's number 3. Excuse me if I don't have that memory correct. It's up near the top. You'll see they didn't comply with a certain section of the code, and I assume that's the one that says that they have to declare the infectious agent, because he's talking about the fact that I didn't go deep enough in the article, I didn't have enough time, but he's talking about all the stuff I've been saying, at least in so many words. So I don't know if I have that for you or not, but at any rate, very interesting to finally get a new a law, if you will, he can say he's a constitutional lawyer for Kanukistan, and he's seeing the very similar things, and if not the same. And so, again, Ohio governor called to show you, though, that appears like something's going on, but it really isn't. Ohio governor calls out Fauci's lies, lifts the HCQ ban. So here we have Dr. Emmanuel, who gets a complaint against her claims about the HCQ dismissed. Ohio governor comes out and says, and you see a political power moving. This is more important about this story, is that this governor has a bit of power here to shut down what the medical board is. Again, that's the executive branch agency is doing, and can impose some impression upon it. Among our most fundamental sacred rights is the right to medical freedom, we thought. And so, excuse me, that's my interjection. But we see that it's still there if you assert it and you stop falling for this nonsense, not because you say it's a fraud, because you can point out certain things that were failed to be done that empower, that remove the prerogative, sovereign prerogative, and put it, the power back in your hands. The prerogative of which is presumed into the official that's speaking. By the very same system of black and white that you denounce is not working or shouldn't work. It's there to protect you if you just line it all up really succinctly. So among our most fundamental freedoms, the sacred rights, is a right to medical freedom, this author says. But in the curious case of hydroxychloroquine, it seems that the government media and pharmaceutical industry has been fighting tooth and nail to make the drug unavailable, despite overwhelming evidence that it can prevent and treat COVID-19. Interjection on this. This is a very myopic view of what the actual constraint is. It's not, see, by leaving it general like government, media, and pharmaceutical industry, when you can actually step into specifics, would advance to the reader a much better understanding of the specifics. This is not just government. These are particular agencies that are tied in to a global condition that is not, my finding, you're going to have to decide yourself, is not binding, and they're making it binding. And this is that alternative that they offer you that you buy into that you were required to stop. And if you just say government, it's too broad. If I told you the CDC, remember I talked about One Health? Boy, that pops right back up quick. One Health is tied in with a global supposed binding agreement. And so we have, if the writer would specify CDC addressing the One Health consideration and then moving into an international protocol, you might understand better how this thing is outside of the governors, although it doesn't give them respite, excuse, or safe harbor. That's how you identify it. Why? Because when you find out what in the undisclosed regulation that they're talking about that is covered over when you just say government, media, and pharmaceutical industry, you don't even know where to go. Take maybe someone like myself that has a little bit of reading and kind of picks stuff up and just has an intuition about this and has an understanding a little bit that tracks it back down. And boy, I'm blessed to be able to do that because I'd just be as blind as most everybody. I mean, really, I just thought about that. This is just a phenomenal thing to be able to do sometimes. And it can be picked up pretty quickly, but you have to know to do it that government, media, and pharmaceutical generically doesn't tell the reader anything. It's too generic, and it places in your mind, it's too abstract. That if you found out that the CDC is actually playing to a regulation authority that tries to interfere with your medical rights, your medical freedom, so-called, then you might be able to focus the reader on, and your listeners on more on the point of what's really happening here, and then you'd be able to focus your attention more specifically and not generically to say, oh, government's bad. No, this guy in this agency just did this counter to that, and that harmed me is a letter of cause and a potential notice of potential claim. Well, relative to, depending on what you want to choose, in fact, it just flashed in my mind, relative to whether or not you've done enough in notice, relative to your remedy, in order to go ahead without other notice to get them to comply. And, okay, so that's abstract. There's a law, a demand by the law, makes your official immediately responsible. You don't have to go through the extra step of bringing them into a request to comply. And I've told you this, the same principle works when I was telling you about your property rights. When you have an administrative agency attacking, it's all the same, folks. All these things work the same. That's why it's so easy to jump back and round in these different jurisdictional things and forums and venues and things. That the administrative power only over, it doesn't, you don't have to exhaust an administrative remedy when the administrative authority, so-called, is infringing on a right they had no right to infringe on. You have immediate recourse or remedy. There's two different words there. One's in the UCC, I just flashed in my mind, and the other one's in the Constitution. And so, again, you got to understand the distinctions and just run them through. Don't be complicated. Don't overcomplicate that. It can be detailed to delineate these things, but they're not really that hard to figure out. Did you hear me speak these things? I'm realizing how fast I talk in some regard. That's how fast they are to understand, actually. that you don't understand them like this means that, well, you probably weren't that interested, even though we ought to have been, and we're finding out the failure of that problem. And more likely familiarity, now you're not, you just don't understand the system that was there to protect us and or is encroaching. And so I talk kind of quick, I suppose, but it's just ideas that are coming to me immediately, spoken, not really no filter, that are just there to know. That if you're having to keep up slow, or you don't understand, or you turn away because it's too complicated, that's the problem. That's you've just broken your ability to actually get a remedy. This is not that hard to really understand. If you made it hard to understand, you haven't spent even a small amount of time to start to organize up how to make it easier for yourself. And moving on to the story here. In Ohio, however, the ban of hydroxychloroquine is being reversed thanks to a strong leadership. Now listen here, folks. The strong leadership of Governor Mike DeWine, the state of Ohio Board of Pharmacy has reversed a rule that would prohibit the sale of hydroxychloroquine for the treatment or prevention of coronavirus. It could mean the difference between life and death for high-risk patients, which Dr. Emanuel was saying. And so this is a powerful position to have done by a governor, yes. He was able to do it. I can leave the rest to you for you to read. But here's my problem with it. The strong leadership of the governor didn't denounce, for the failure to identify infectious agent, the entire COVID condition, which he had power to do and had duty to do. And so in here you see the governor allowing you a treatment in Ohio, when in fact he has no power to allow you anything. He has no power to prohibit anything unless and until you can find evidence that they've determined the infectious agent locally and not through some presumptive suggestion, goal, recommendation, guidance, or anything else foreign to the jurisdiction within which an outbreak occurs. And so in this story, I want to point out, again, I've done this a couple times, the governors are saying, here, you're going to get protection. They don't have that power. They don't have the power to allow. They don't have the power to prohibit. They're supposed to leave this alone until they identify that infectious agent, a requirement, duty, and obligation of which is in every state law, which you will focus on when you start to understand what's going on and you want to become the mass of people, I would hope, it would rise up, stop resisting by your statements, stop protesting, stop arguing on masks. Go right after the failure and show that there's no authority over it. And if you think that these governors that would profess to be able to order their health department to allow hydroxychloroquine, if you think they're going to give up the power that they didn't deny, that they hadn't found the infectious agent, and they're going to give up their tyrannical power, you're deluded. And this is where it's gone. And I didn't make that rule. I come from a different, like we all, everything kumbaya, we got along, the law just guided everybody. Okay, you had to, that was just the guidance how we met. The wraps are off on this one, folks. They did this on 9/11, again, never forget. In hindsight 2020 now, they've locked it down, they've done it. They did exactly what I was telling you was coming, right on cue. And so, what am I talking here? We're talking about the lack of infectious agent. They continue to impose this condition where nobody can find an infectious agent. They rely on foreign suggestion. I say hearsay, but I can't even believe it's that much, and I would hate to say hearsay because the courts are now accepting that. So I got to find, maybe settle down and find a different word for that, what they're accepting. It's not even hearsay. It's actually a suggestion by a foreign hostile enemy if you go from China. But at any rate, moving over to here, what are we looking at in these governors? They're the commander-in-chief during wartime in their state. They have pretty much absolute power at that point. And so we're looking at, for their jurisdiction, the power of a president. And we look at the influences upon a governor who doesn't tell you he hasn't determined the infectious disease, that he doesn't have the power to allow or disallow. And it brought up this story that happened, and then this kind of triggers a whole bunch of collateral pieces of information that kind of formed up all together, which led me into, which was, I think, then topped off by an email I got wanting me to look at a video that within which I find out this international regulation supposedly binding, which caught that just fixated my whole attention on that because that thing I didn't know. Again, your ignorance of something can hurt. That so-called binding nature of that agreement would have an immense effect on anything that you do. It does have an immense effect on anything that you do. But let me start off where this start. I had on my tabs. The Belarusian president claims IMF and World Bank offered him a bribe to impose COVID restrictions. Okay, so here's the story about this. And it was kind of a fascinating. I mean, this is like, wow, this is out in the open like this. It doesn't, okay, that title is a paraphrase of what happened. And so you have to understand the dynamic of what happened. It did happen. But what was important here for me was at the same time, if you remember last week, we pointed out, and I got a couple of Twitter and an email, we found out that the World Bank had listed the COVID-19 test kits for export to countries in 2017 and 2018. Subsequently, by the time I got, I think I was saving the last two tabs for that evidence. I was saving that as apparently the World Bank was changing their titles to change COVID-19 test kits for 2017-2018 to medical test kits. They took away the designation. So the next day I found that out, I got another email said they changed that. And so I made my blogcaster with that link, and I said, okay, let myself, you know, for I'm looking at, well, what am I going to do with this? That could be very important information. The designation of COVID-19 test kits in 2017, before they even knew it was novel in 2019 at the end, in the beginning of 2020. And the thought came to me, let's go look, follow the money, let's go look for a money connection to COVID-19 test kits, and quickly turned up a corroborating website relative to the changed information on the World Bank. So first of all, why would they change that? Why don't they just leave it there? And that they were changing it starts to bring on a whole bunch of things. We got maybe conspiracy to defraud. They're in on it. Their connections to it all, which now I'm looking for that. But sure enough, on something, I think it was an OECD website, I found a bunch of charts. I think there's actually three, but I focused on the tariffs chart. The tariffs chart shows, and you'll see this is the blogcaster of last week. If you'll go to there, I had add these links in later, because the first links I put in don't show COVID-19 exports. They show medical test kit, and you got to track the numbers of the test kits. But I found a OECD, and I can't remember what the name of that is. You go back to last week, get the link. You'll see to the website and table number 6, I think it was. Excuse me on the numbers. But at any rate, it says they were talking about tariffs for COVID-19 test kits for 2017-2018. So I copied that off for myself, for my files, just in case we need it at some point, to show that this COVID-19 in title existed prior. Well, so I'm not just focused on that part. I want to know, okay, this thing was in the works all the time. And so what it was going through the World Bank, this is why this title is so important. It starts to gel together why the World Bank is offering bribes at all. Why would the IMF? This is the money of the world here, folks, if you haven't quite figured it out. This is the fiscal part. This is what I tell you. Agenda 2030 wraps this. You'll go into austerity and you'll be a fiscal debt slave for the rest of your existence and the existence of your future. And so this is why the money, follow the money, becomes important as well. So the World Bank is in this title. And you read this story about the Belarusian president. I have a couple links for you. Is the Belarusian president unwilling to accept additional terms to get foreign loans? So this is what they've described as bribing. And I'm thinking, this is really fantastic has a different meaning in my mind, but this is a pretty outlandish statement by this Belarusian president, but he is a president. I'm going to have to give it a lot of weight here, and the players that I know of are involved are around him. And so he won't accept the additional terms, which are essentially to do every mitigation measure that you have heard to be put on a society. The one thing that caused my question, and I think it was one of these sites, and I don't, of the Armstrong Economics, he lists as one of the last things, here's a, imposed an extreme lockdown of his people, forced them to wear face masks, imposed strict curfews, imposed a police state, and crashed the economy. Now, that last one caught my attention as maybe not being true. I don't think that they would tell him to crash his economy. They wouldn't tell him he's going to crash his economy. They wouldn't even tell him that. So in this case, I've sort of looked at this story as maybe just a bunch of sensationalism. That's what caused the question to go research. However, I found other places referring to the very same thing, translations that referred to the actual interaction in the meeting, the conversation, where the president wouldn't say, we're not going to take money if it means we're going to have to do these additional measures. Why would I want to be like Italy? Wow, okay, that's another statement there. He's comparing his insight to what they did in Italy. He doesn't want to have that to his country. And so this became a reality. The IMF and World Bank bribed him. Why would the World Bank do that? Now, I don't mean just the conspiracy theory stuff. Why would they do that? Now, I look at it from, well, they would do that if they have an operation going, a plan. They have a future they want. Again, I'm trying to stay into the documents that we can produce, the things I've been talking about for over a decade, that's out there for us to read, that goes back way back decades. And so this is all coming to fruition. And these people are incorrigible. They're not. You see now a dynamic in the government. You could see how easily they could buy people. And we identified this locally real quick. The government, the state, the counties are so worried about their money. Just what I told you. As soon as the state started to declare emergencies, they would start getting money. I said that's it. That's what they're doing. And that's been the focus. If they do anything counter with the federal government's largesse, they might be cut out. It's all based in fraud. And then why would everyone be based in fraud? Why is the World Bank paying for stuff? Why would they pay money if you're going to kill a country? Well, it's the future they want. It's all why. It's not just an opinion. They've written it down. And so we have now backed up proof about this Belarusian president's condition. And then I found it. I looked around and said, it's happened again. And I think I might have mentioned it. I don't remember. I don't stick on this stuff. I just let you know. And I hope you do stuff with this. But the WHO, H-W-O, they say WHO now. It's actually W.H.O. I don't want you to forget there's an organization here. It's not just the little thing I pull off, the WHO, not the rock group or the owl. This is an organization. It should have dots between them. This is not a word. But we tend to do that. Right. This is an organization. It has a place it comes from, and it has an agenda that is functioning. And it's not WHO. It's the World Health Organization. Okay, moving on. Again, this becomes important if you keep everything straight of what you're dealing with. Not let these headlines run, because the headlines run in a different style than you would when you get into writing your letters. But the WHO offered a $20 million bribe to poison COVID-19 cure from Madagascar president. That's the president that found out that the COVID PCR test actually was testing the papaya, the pheasant, and the goat positive. And so we got another link here. They threw the organization out. But here, in a shocking development, President of Madagascar has made a sensational claim that the WHO offered a $20 million bribe to poison the COVID cure, the cure that Africans were using. And this Madagascar president said, I don't want the West to denounce what we do here in Africa. Our stuff works. I'm not going to have them poison what we use and do here. We're a people that have rights to stand up for ourselves. We can protect ourselves. And so he came out and said that he was bribed. So at the time, I think he was the first one, it was a shocking development. Apparently not so shocking, because they did it to the Belarusian president. And so here's back to the World Bank, the same people that are changing their website to show you, to strip their website of the fact that they were selling COVID-19 tests before it was even known that COVID-19 would exist, or that it would be novel. And this brings us back to who called it that, not who called it that, but we were told from China, Wuhan, suggested it was presumptively SARS-CoV-2. We're going to call it what? They didn't even call it COVID-19 then, did they? Don't miss that little trick. I told you they did something when they changed that name. There's a couple things they did. I said that on another broadcast. So the WHO is willing, at the WHO's behest, the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund is willing to bribe presidents. They did the same thing in the feds. It was, here's some money for an emergency. We're going to say, you got the cue sheet. This is how we run this place. No one will notice if everyone keeps consistent. It's these guys that didn't that start to show what's going on. So I have a link to a newspaper magazine cover where if you needed more and you need pictures, I actually found a cover who offered $20 million bribe to see COVID-19 medicine poisoned, says Madagascar president. Africa had a cure or whatever they felt was a treatment sufficient to stop it, and he was being told to cause a problem with that, and he said, no, we're a people that have our own ways, and they work, and you're not going to contaminate us. And so he's another one that exposes this problem. Then we hear Burundi kicks out the WHO coronavirus team for interference in internal matters. Wow, internal matters. This is inside your governments, inside your country, inside your rights, inside what you think it was. They're interfering with internal matters of your republic. And you, we keep crickets? So we got somebody that didn't like what they were doing, kicks out the supposed authority. What I found in rules now, looking now that I found one, they're considered medical experts, the head of which isn't even a medical doctor, but can be found to be doing, I would say, war crimes on his people before he got moved up through the system and promoted through the Gates people. And though that group of who's who, and I say that particularly, but with regard to the statement acknowledgments coming up with the regulation that we find. It's not mentioned, but the Burundi is kicking out the World Health Organization top official in the country just days before the presidential election. A foreign minister letter seen by the Associated Press says the WHO representative of Burundi, Walter Kazadi Mulumbo, has been declared persona non grata and must leave the East African nation by Friday. The letter says the WHO experts also must go. Enough there. They kicked them out. Whether they got back, I'm not saying. What they found out was that there was a these people are really incorrigible, and they got caught, and then you need to be remembering that, because these people don't mean you any good, and they're deemed to be medical experts in every place you read about COVID, and your governors take, right this point, until you give notice, good faith, reliance on all that, and you got to kill all that. And this is what I'm leading up to today. Those of you that are doing this, is we're dealing in a global thing, and that this is not a joke, and this is already working against you. And yet, in the United States, we have very powerful things that we could bring to bear if we only would. World Bank, IMF exposed COVID aid conditioned in imposing extreme lockdowns. If you want a more consolidated summary, you can go to the Zero Hedge article I have here, and they go through this very same thing. I found this last after I did my research about did any other president were they bribed, and I stopped at two for the sake of the broadcast. I don't have the time to keep going. I'm just going to get enough information that I'm convinced. But to see, not necessarily that I even have to prove that perfection, that thing. I just know that that could happen relative to what the agenda is running. And if all governors in the United States all fell for it, why not other presidents of other countries? The whole world went down except for a few. The anomalies in that are telling. Sweden is telling on what's going on. It allows you to say, well, they didn't lock down and they're fine. They didn't lock down. They also didn't destroy their economy. Why did everybody else, especially the United States, whose laws say you don't destroy your place, in fact, you do the least imposition as possible, how did their economy get destroyed and how have all you been crickets against that? Is really at the tail of what's going on in the world. Really astonishing to me. But anyway, so huge foreign loans are given to sovereign nations by World Bank, IMF, and the likes. But the conditions that come attached to these loans are seldom told by governments to their citizens. And so if you want to read a more summary of all these little things I just told you, I found this on Zero Hedge. They make mention to Italy at the very end, and I want you to just kind of hold that out. I'm not going to read. I'm just using I use the tabs to tell you where you can go read to back up what I come through, what I look at, what informs me to move on to what the point I want to look for. And for me, it's looking for a remedy, and in particular lately with helping people. I need to keep abreast of things like a binding international agreement. That can really make a big difference, and it does. So well, I'm interested to find out. But at the end of this story, they talk about referencing the Italian politicians demanding the arrest of Bill Gates. these things that are going on. We're finding information now that people are looking at. It took a while. People getting oriented. They're finding out, again, these comorbidities are really more important. Also, someone did an analysis. They found out for the 2 years or year and a half before COVID, there was actually a less death impact. People were dying less for a year and a half. In other words, older people were getting older without dying. And when COVID hit, it was like for them the straw that broke the camel's back. Very interesting analysis. That's like, I appreciated to see someone thinking, being able to have the ability to think in that direction. I would never get there to see it. They contribute to my information on what might have caused the escalated numbers as well. Because I was trying to figure out after COVID, after the flu season, where were they getting their numbers? Well, people are just dying because of the interference that COVID is running. And again, the problem with this is it's really a crime against mankind, what they're doing here. But here we have Italy. I want you to remind you of Italy because very interesting what came out of Italy. We're going to talk about that after I get to this. What would the World Bank be involved consistently on this? And it turns out to be mentioned in a regulation, which then after this study, an email comes and says, here's a video. And they were focused on the exercises that have been planned, like Event 201 and all these other things that have been planned in history. Somebody went through and documented all that. And the thing that caught my ear was right up front in the beginning was that there was an international agreement that was found that was binding on all the countries that were signatory to it. And the United States was one. Now, I would say anybody rule on democracy likely is involved. And so that pricked my ears because if that's the case, and it's a silent, binding agreement, it would be binding even to the states. Immediately, my mind, again, it processes, my mind thinks in these regards in process, in procedure. My mind immediately went to the idea of the governor's orders, and then it, I don't know how to tell you my mind works. It just flashed at the idea of why. The silence on local authority and the reliance on foreign authority. In other words, the CDC, the WHO, the reliance on China, the suggestion, okay, that Pompeo actually tells you is a live exercise and that they're concerned with the data that's coming from all this and that China should be more forthcoming. It was about data. It was a live exercise. No, you think that that's just opinion. Then you find the document that talks about exercises, and it's an international agreement. It's something you have to start taking very important notice of, if not fatally disregard it. And so if you, my beginnings, not because of plan, but by direction, if I take inspiration to go where I'm told, if you will, is in international law, a long and old research I did that I never went back to, but something sticks about it. Benedict's on Admiralty. It was done I read for a week in a law library at a university. And it's an encyclopedia set of books like the Encyclopedia Britannica, but it's called Before Admiralty. But in reading it, and I read 3/4 of it, apparently I didn't need any more. And I haven't at this point, though I don't remember all of it. It really relates to exactly what you see in your statutes of how this all is tied together and the principles that are used. Well, this is what bides inside me, whether I can cite to it or not, these things. And this is where I understand about a bit, not an expert, but a bit, enough to be familiarized with concepts like international treaties, agreements, conventions, their importance. And so in the acknowledgement that it could be a binding agreement, whatever it was at the time. I find out later what it is, so I'm able to now go right to it. And I thank the emailer for that and the video maker for that to get me right to the point. I didn't have to waste a lot of time. This is how we can become powerful together. And so I get right to the agreement. The first thing I want to know was what if this is binding, what's the reservation of the United States? And so I got a link. The first link I found really wasn't the link I should have gotten. And, which is fine. It was just a copy, but I found there was a little bit of a difference in it. Anyway, I'm going to use this one that I found on the internet that comes from the WHO.int site. And I'm going to go with this as the authority. And I'm going to do that because they used the term United States of America in it, where the other document was more looking like a handwritten thing that doesn't state that. That could have been an official letter, but I just didn't want to rely on it for this. I just go to the document that's said to be binding on the United States, and I go down, and for those of you that may get this and are listening on the tape, please download. You got to get these links so you can go right through them with me as I do. I typed in, I wanted to find out about what did America do reservation. There's actually a link to the original reservation on paper. I'd use that to start to know that the United States did make a reservation. I would expect that the reservation would be that the federal government cannot make an agreement that would impose upon its limitations, if you will, even though it's a sovereign. You're going to find out that the government's limited here. You're going to read it right here and who the real authorities are in some regard and how this devolves and whether or not and to what extent this might be binding. Now, this is the International Health Regulation of 2005. I had not known that this was considered binding. And so I'm now, again, with new piece of information, I got to rethink. It turns directly on a couple of projects I'm helping with on whether or not they could be defeated silently if they didn't rebut the presumption of its authority, given all governor's orders I've read do not include the local compliance with the local duties and obligations, but they all refer to international or foreign or international sources. And I say foreign, and then I said international. The CDC and the federal government are foreign and, if you will, international to the state, given its de jure capacity. I don't make a big deal about it. I just put two categories there, and I track as I'm reading each capacity. One's de jure, one's de facto. Right? So then international would be exactly offshore, outside even of the United States. And this could be even the UN, who's parked on our soil, United States, which I said, that building needs to be knocked on over. Everybody in it needs to get their paddles out and paddle themselves back over to the EU, because that's where they belong. The United States really is different. You're going to hear it right in here in this reservation. There is a reservation. So now we have a question of whether it's actually binding, and I'm going to bring up two more points about how it's not binding relative to international law and its treatment on agreements, conventions, and things like that, relative to an understanding that you'll have to research. I don't have a link for it, about how you interpret some of these things. And yes, there's a lot here, but this is how they're doing it to you. They overwhelmed us. They got us focused on that it was, America way, apple pie, mom's apple pie, and baseball. Then they stole your baseball, and they put cardboard people in it. They told you that's the new normal. And you sat there, okay, instead of saying, wait a minute, shut this down. What happened here? Okay, it's not a threat to your life. Maybe you didn't need it all. But they have definitely changed things, and you aren't stopping any of it. And yet I look and see no relationship to any governor's order to local. I see every instance of reference and reliance to international. That brings this IHR relevant. And then we want to find out its binding effect and to the extent, and I read from reservations and understandings. All I did in the document is I typed in of America. If you type in America, you're going to get Pan America or Pan American pop up. It's not where you want to go. You type in of America, you get right down to the reservations and understandings section. And I read from the United States section. The mission, capital M, and for those of you that aren't kind of integrated with style and capitalization, you really have to read for them, because this mission means, as a definition, actually, the word mission here is capitalized. It means something. It's probably the delegation that was lawfully delegated to go do this negotiation. And so it has a bigger context in the capitalization. You keep track of that, you start keeping track that they're also, like you see, the WHO is actually an organization. The mnemonic, if you will, is it an acronym there? It means something. It's like a noun. It's not really a word. And so the mission is not a word here. It's not what they did. It's actually a thing that you have to go research, which I didn't. Let me read it here, though. Let's just use it in the context of what I would normally understand. The mission was the delegated authority to go integrate them to do the negotiation regarding an international health regulation of 2005. Understand the chronology and understand, start putting things in place about what happens thereafter. You find out when you go to the CDC website and you find out that One Health is instigated in 2010. I told you in 2011 they'd already done a lot of stuff. That's how modernization acts were developed, because something had happened before. I hadn't known this is might have been what it is, and that it was said to be binding. Your job, if you wish to set it, accept it, and you'll have to, is understand how to make the statement that there's no binding international agreement. Even maybe to quote this reservation in part, where it says the mission, by means of this note, informs the acting Director General of the World Health Organization that the government of the United States of America accepts the IHRs subject to reservations, understandings referred below. The mission, by means of this note, and in accordance with the Article 22 of the Constitution of the World Health Organization and Article 559(1) of the IHR, submits the following reservation on behalf of the government of the United States of America. Formal sounding, isn't it? You understand, the government of the United States of America. And so this is a representative capacity in a things that exist the way they're supposed to, not the way we run them together. We just talk about the United States here in the States. And that's just the government of the United States in so many more words. And internationally, they state it that way. They just don't say the United States. Anyway, moving on here. The United States of America reserves the right to assume obligations under these regulations in a manner consistent with its fundamental principles of federalism. With respect to obligations concerning the development, strengthening, and maintenance of the core capacity requirements set forth in Annex 1, these regulations shall be implemented by the federal government or the state governments as appropriate and in accordance with our Constitution, to the extent that the implementation of these obligations comes under the legal jurisdiction of the federal government. To the extent that such obligations come under the legal jurisdiction of the state governments, the federal government shall bring such obligations within a favorable recommendation to the notice of the appropriate state authorities. Isn't that cool sounding to you? Cool sounding to me. You see the federalism defined now in the next part? This statement was really pretty clear, and it was really accurate, and it was really simple to lay out. Federalism was a distinction in the United States of America that the federal government could not act contrary to the states' obligations of the states. I've been telling you this very point without knowing this reservation was there. This almost has to be a reservation, almost across the board, because no, the federal government does. Well, I'm going to read the Iran part, and I'll show you something here. It has to do with the extent at which the government of the United States can enter into an agreement. And by this reservation, they're actually accurately stating to you that the power is in the states where the power resides, and public health is in the states, as I've been telling you. And so I'm just backward proof that the government of the United States already knows this, whether you knew it or not. I've been telling you that your state authorities are prevail actually here. Now, relative to a federal act, maybe not, but where it interferes with the state right to public health, then it would under the 10th Amendment. You don't hear me talk about all these constitutional things, but this is the hierarchy on how this works. And under international law, what would have had to have happened relative to how this place was wired and different than any other country in the world. You almost hear the sovereignty of the state standing up here. They do have some conditional statements. You do see the federal government shall where it can. But then if there's anything, it will make a recommendation to the states in notice. There's nothing binding, I'll just use that short word there, upon the states. Now, what protects you is the statutes that the legislature has made in order to ensure that due process is made in order to protect you against the tyrannical thing you watched happen, where none of you stepped up and said, but nobody followed this, at least this one statute, to determine the infectious agent. They took it on they took it on the word of an enemy government. Then there's a whole lot more behind that. Anyway, the mission, by means of this note, notice he's not saying notice, not getting formal there, they just say note, it means notice. Also, submits three understandings on behalf of the government of the United States of America. The first understanding relates to the application of the IHRs to incidences involving natural, accidental, or deliberate release of chemical, biological, or radiological materials. Let me interject here. This is why all governors are treating it without telling you. They're treating it through emergency acts that are actually for the defense of chemical, biological, and radiological attack. And so we're seeing the confirmation within the function of the orders by the orders' statutory authority. And so I'm going to tell you, and let me tell it to you like I normally do it. When I see something like this, I'd rather account for it than to dismiss it and have it account. And so this is telling me we're dealing with that beast in every governor's order. This thing is playing in the governor's orders by what statutes they're moving this through, which is an emergency, which anticipates a biological, chemical, or radiological attack. I'm going to stop here. It goes on to discuss things like disease, event, public emergency. It makes a reservation against them. It says it can, again, it's going to do only as far as practicable. It will do things for the notifying the World Health Organization within that constraint. It will move information. It'll be the go-between to the World Health Organization. But it's making the reservation. Ultimately, it says the United States understands the provisions of the regulations do not create judicially enforceable private rights. And so I'm still a little questioning whether or not that's coming from the international against the United States, private rights would be like in the WHO, the WHO, or whether that comes from private rights from us. However, we have private rights of remedy different. And so they talk about all this. What I found interesting is the Iranian reservations, where I would support their ability to autonomously work in the world, and we try to keep on the point of where we're all trying to keep peace. I will not support what their interesting reservation or objection was. Their objection was to the United States reservation. And they go on to say the Islamic Republic of Iran says the permanent mission, capital letters PM, the permanent mission of the Islamic Republic of Iran to the United Nations office and other international organizations in Geneva presents its complement to the World Health Organization and with reference to note verbal number dated 17/2007 January, this concerning the reservation understanding of the government of the United States on the International Health Regulation IHR has the honor to convey the official objection of the government of the Islamic Republic of Iran to the same reservation and understandings based on the following. According to the IHR, the states may take reservations of these regulations. Such reservations shall not be incompatible with the object and purpose of these regulations. Furthermore, in accordance with the IHR, the implementation of these regulations shall be guided by the goal of their universal application for the protection of all people and the world from international spread of disease. Now, right there, my mind is screaming, but that's the trap. Let me get past that and read here. The government of the Islamic Republic of Iran believes that by giving more prominence to federalism than its obligations under the IHR, the reserving government attempts to evade its due responsibilities and obligations. The affirmation government, which is the United States here, by adopting a selective approach, provides its states with the option of exempting themselves from full compliance with the provisions of the IHR. Since implementation of the IHR largely depends on the development and strengthening and maintenance of the core capacity requirements set forth in Annex 1, reservation of such general nature leads to undermining the IHR foundation as well as its integrity and universal applicability. Such reservation is considered to be incompatible with the object and purpose with these regulations and therefore unacceptable. I'll stop there. You can read more. This is a fascinating insight. However, with all due respect to Iran, its sovereignty, and what it wants to do in the global stage, and how it wants to control people and destroy them through the fraud of health like the United States government is doing under the not disclosing these sorts of things. The government of the United States of America has not been given the authority to change that relationship. And therefore, if push come to shove, the United States should not actually be involved with this regulation if the Iranian objection is going to hold. Because it does not have a power to make an agreement to interfere with the way this place, the United States of America, has been established. And you hear that it says there's nothing mandatory and binding on the states in this regard underneath that reservation. And so an interesting insight from another country not liking it, trying to expose they should be brought into tow, the United States government, sovereignty of the government, should be brought into tow underneath this unification principle for worldwide health driven by technocratic bureaucrats. And yet the government said didn't really respond. They don't have to. Iran only believes this. I'm going to suggest the reservation's binding, and then I'm going to suggest something else, and this dropped me into another, there's another level of anticipation. It has to do with how this is made, how this regulation, again, regulation by definition is policy, it's not law. All on its face, if you just look at this, it's administrative. This gets us into that adjunct policy nonsense. The United States government has made the reservation. It's telling you the states are the power. Iran knows it's the power and says the states could just jump, just not even recognize this. I'm telling you that's the fact. I'm telling you that's what your local duties and obligations for your local health officials to make a determination local on the infectious agent or contagion or whatever word they want to use causing the symptoms that they're seeing that are being reported to them. Iran doesn't like that we have this power. I'm telling you, this is the distinction in the United States of America and all your states. This is really kind of an insight. They explain the states are not bound by this on that statement. Let me jump now to what I wanted to jump to within conventions, understandings, and this is just a limited knowledge here. You'd have to go research all this for yourself. If I go in, I do as word search for the word goal, G-O-A-L. So I had to pause on that. I wanted to see whether there's goals or recommendations. Goals, in particular, under international law, are considered aspirations, and they're not binding on their own. And I found the very first one that pops up when I put the word goal in. I can't remember now the citation to where it's at. Let me look quick. Oh, Article 3 Principles. I think this is Part 1, Article 3 Principles. It goes in number 3. Article 3, number 3, the implementation of the regulations, capital R, shall be guided by the goal of their universal application for the protection of all people of the world from the international spread of disease. That's the goal that was talked to about by Iran. But goals are aspirations. Goals are not binding. And so the implementation of these regulations shall be guided is an aspirational document, which, okay, I point this out. Why? Because we're coming to a place where we have to make a set of statement facts when it comes to the judicial evidence that shows within the context, even though you haven't been told, you reference the foreign reliance brings up the question of its foreign integration that brings you to look at this regulation, which in its principles is only guiding and aspirational. On its own, ought to get rid of the entirety of the binding nature. So let me go look at recommendations, because those are not binding as well. And you see, you would understand recommendation really doesn't mean anything. It's a suggestion, as I keep saying. It's these guidances. You see, guidance, it should guide by the goal, is not authority. Well, not when a CDC issues a guidance, do you think it has authority? I'm talking lawful power. No, it's just a suggestion. As you saw the reservation say the federal government would give a notice to the states to determine. There's no authority. It's fascinating when you look at how interesting they state that, where the power really is. Like I said, you come with William Roberts, I'm going to mention again, become vocal local. All right, that's what I've been saying. That's what he was saying at the time. Rest in peace, William. That's how we got together. We're saying the same thing. He goes, you got to act local. I said, yeah, you have to act within the laws local because that's where the protection is. That's where the due process. That's what this place is different than the world. And we're right back to that. These are guidances, the regulations, the policy. Policy's not law either. They're all aspirational. So number one, let's go to recommendations because those are not binding either. And right in the definition, at least they're truthful. One thing I can suggest, they may be deceitful, but at least they're truthful in their deceit. Temporary recommendations pops up if you just look for the word recommendation. It means non-binding advice issued by WHO, not even the WHO here, which I found fascinating, pursuant to Article 15 for the application of time-limited, risk-specific basis in response to public health emergency or international concern so as to prevent or reduce the international spread of disease and minimize interference with international traffic. Well, isn't that interesting? Because some of the statutes I've noticed in the states say they're supposed to, the mandate and duty of the local health authority is to stop the spread of disease. And so this was not be compliant on that standard, but it's not binding. It's an advice. Advice, right? Guidance, goal, objective. These are all aspirational. And so there's reference to the temporary recommendations. When you go click through the studying for recommendations, there's actually a whole part now. I click again because I'm searching the word recommendation in this document. Part 3, recommendations. Article 15 is temporary recommendations. They have Article 16 is standing recommendations. 17 is critical for recommendations. Right? On and on we go. Recommendations, Article 18, with respect to persons, baggage, cargo, containers, conveyances, goods, and postal parcels. Recommendations issued by who to state parties. Let me just stop. You can read it. When you find out these recommendations are non-binding, even standing, I don't know where it, okay, I see it didn't come up yet. The standing recommendations is defined the same way. It's not binding. And so you see, the even in the recommendations are not binding, the reservations not binding, the aspirations are not binding. I would say, relative to the Iranian acknowledgement that this United States of America is wired different, that the government of the United States, respecting the federalism establishment, could not order the state to do a thing, that you're finding out through this place, this reservation, and these objections, and the fact that the WHO's regulation is not actually binding. You're finding out the power is local, just like I've been saying. Let me offer one more thing, which is fascinating. And again, a lot of people may be doing a lot of work. There may be well-intentioned people really looking at it. And so even though I may deny their authority, it is some people that may have some good information. What interestingly, I just happened to scroll through and the cursor stopped at this little spot. And to find it, you put in, does the event meet? You type that in your word search, rolls it down to a table. Does the event, and this is the health disaster that they claim, does it meet at least two of the following criteria? What I found interesting about this, and I'm not going to go through it more than to point out, if you go through some of these, and you think, and you go back to your state statutes, and you look at the duties and obligations, and you see what the local health authority locally was supposed to do, not looking out to the CDC or the WHO or to Wuhan or some whatever presumptive thing that they will hearsay they want to impose, but you don't even know is not even an economic societal attack if you'll buy into it, which is what I think you can easily do. All right, but here, does it meet the following examples? I looked through this list, and a lot of it would have been something I would have wanted to see in a governor's order locally. Here's the point. Here's the, right here in the regulation, which I'm suggesting to you is not binding, and it only suggests things, and might be a good idea to have everybody on board to a real Spanish flu thing. But when you look at what they're actually doing with it, this is a weapon, the binding nature of which is really not existent. However, what they wrote in this, does this meet table, if you look at it, why weren't the governor's orders having a couple of these listed? Because when you see what a couple of these things are, they comport to what the duties and obligations are in your state legislature enacted duties and obligations for executive officers in public health matters. they say, event caused by a pathogen with a high potential to cause epidemic, infectiousness of the agent, high case fatality, multiple transmission routes, or healthy carrier. Did you hear anything like that stated in any one of your orders of the one, how they identified any bit of that? Because I can see that's supposed to be done in the determination. Indicate the treatment. Indication of treatment failure. Did you see how they didn't even do that before they implemented? They didn't even do it yet? No, they destroyed a treatment by attacking it, and then the doctors who were advancing that it could be treatable. That didn't make part of the record. That started to tell me this was something else. This is telling you that this IHR is used as a weapon. That these guidances here are proper. They give plausible authority to what you're supposed to do. But I see things that are missing in what is in the governor's orders that the state statute also says should be there. And I don't think in complicity with this. I think it's when you're looking for to identify the infectious agent, you have to look for the pathogen or the contagion. You got to identify it. Not as a presumption. It's right here in this list. Cases reported among health staff. Did you even hear how many people in the health staff were getting taken down? No, we got a bunch of numbers that came out through a PCR test, which is not evidence of anything. So, again, co-committing factors is added here that may hinder or delay the public health response. Population at risk is especially vulnerable. How? They actually show you that there's a checklist. When two of these things match, they can run with it. The point is, this list started to show if you were anything of which was missing, all of which is missing, actually. They make references to things, but you're not looking at any actual evidence. And so this is, I found interesting to note, you have to make a statement eventually, but you don't know if you have to do it in the letters, but you will in your court documentation, that you will infer an international agreement, which is non-binding, or infer a non-binding national agreement, the goals and recommendations of which are not binding, the reservation to the state power by the government of the United States of America is binding because of the what? The organic establishment in federalism where the states have rights and the public health authority is in the state. It's sort of like wildlife management as well. It's in the state. There's no federal nature. Now, it could expand out, but not relative to the local jurisdiction or the officials who are constrained to that territory. And so here's a backhanded proof, if you will. There is this agenda running. I'll tell you it's running because what I forgot to go, let me go back to there and get right back to the World Bank. And that's why I forgot to write that note. I'm glad I found it because you type in World Bank in this document, I think it was, and I believe it was in the acknowledgments. And if it wasn't this document, it's and if I'm in error here, there's another document that I don't have the link to, that was a report that does have the World Bank acknowledgement, that does speak to, I think that's how this works, that does speak to this regulation. And the World Bank in that document, I apologize for not having that up, so much going on, so many proofs to see. There's another document that I can't remember comes from another, the WHO organization, that acknowledges the World Bank in the implementation of that plan going through this IHR. So now we've tied up the circle of facts that brings the World Bank relevant to implementing this thing more as a weapon than as what you heard the reservation of the United States of America. And when you find out that what you keep stepping into the IHR, the implementation of the IHR, through the World Bank, they're imposing One Health, that quote, One Health, and the CDC has a website built for One Health. It's international, this program. It's all focused through the World Bank, not all focused, it's the money man, if you will. It's the one that does the negotiations called bribes to world leaders to get them to move and promote this agenda, which Iran would believe and impose upon you to not give you the rights local to the state, but the United States government itself recognizes. They cannot do what they're doing when you step up and say they can't do what they're doing. Until you do, and if you remain silent within your law, your documents, your legal documents, the judge, being a bar member, being there to promote sustainable development by their House delegates' resolutions, by even an aspirational idea, theology, ideology in the judge, will take silent judicial notice of this international regulation and will impose the principles silently to your case. That's how we get reflexive law, and this is what other thing that came to my mind when I was doing the research. That's how we've heard these reflexive law determinations where someone will come in and say, but I proved that the other side was wrong and I still lost. See, the community has more rights than you, where you don't throw down the presumption that there's a higher, I can't say higher, they say higher, but like higher education is all the same nonsense, that it's a prevailing principle against your rights locally because you did not rebut it. And a simple statement of rebuttal, you know, you can use, I guess, rebut, or you just make the statement, there is no binding international agreement relative to health. And when you state that, you now get it on the record. If the other side answers, they're going to have to show how there is. And that brings it out. You can then take more time to do an amended complaint if you need to, or you just have it stricken as relevant by showing it can't be used in the binding nature by stating the things I've prepared for you, presented that you would bring forth in the future. You have to preload your record and your complaint with that I'll call it a rebuttal. You just stated, even though it's not in a way I've rationalized to do this, I took the governor's orders and looked and seen all the international reliance and said, there's no local reliance. If they're international reliance, that must be committing to an international regulation. That's what I then used to say, that's not, if there is one that's not binding. To the extent that it is binding, the little words are coming back to my mind, to the extent that it is binding, it's not binding in the area of aspiration, recommendations, and to pursue it to the regulation, the reservation of the United States that says the state is empowered by its local public health laws to enforce the statute, which I'm telling you then bring up and say, which was violated where the orders of the governor never stated any of this, instead relied on international sources. Okay, so I said a lot of words there. If you go back and take notes, you can hopefully get the idea. I think that was concise enough. I don't think it was stated too abstractly. That's what you're going to have to eventually get into your paper. One of these fact statements, in fact, this is what's coming out in some project, at least one project, and I was already kind of leaning, I've already leaned in that direction before in the statements I've made to you, but I've seen because this thing sits here, it invokes this adjunct policy as law, it's presumed within the rule of law and democracy overthrow of your life. They move into the reflexive decision where the community underneath that law, it prevails over everything. And it requires no laws. And that's why you have to come in now. I hadn't said it before. I didn't know it was there. There's not been many people I've talked with that have shown me here's what I wanted to file and filed it. So I think I'm still ahead of time on that curve to tell you you're going to have to throw in a it's a rebuttal, the best word that comes to my mind at this point. You don't have to use the word rebuttal. You just have to say that there may be an international agreement that is not binding in this matter. And then I'd kick out that reservation of the United States of America and then return back to your statute that the governor, the health officials and the governor have not complied with. And so moving in, remember I talked about Italy? Remember I talked about the reference from the Zero Hedge? A very interesting gentleman pops up in my research and looking for terms and this and that. Name's Giorgio Agamben. The state of exception provoked by an unmotivated emergency. Fascinating discussion. This is a translation that someone did. Similar minds. I don't know the context by which this is all written, but it sure touched very well consistently with what I've told you. And I want to read a little bit of it. It's just another mind looking in the world and saying, you know, this is just not supportable. not support it makes no sense, but it has an underlying purpose, and it's not in health. And this is important to get, and for me, it's like just another witness of that point, and focuses our mind on what we might be speaking to. It goes on to in a translated thing, a translated article written by Giorgio Gambin. In order to make sense of the frantic, irrational, and absolutely unwarranted emergency measures adopted for a supposed epidemic of coronavirus, we must begin with the declaration of the Italian National Research Council, NRC, according to which, quote, there is no SARS-CoV-2 epidemic in Italy, close quote. It continues, in any case, quote, the infection according to the epidemiological data available as of today and based on tens of thousands of cases causes light, moderate symptoms, parenthetically a variant of flu in 80 to 90% of the cases. In 10 to 15%, there's a chance of pneumonia, but which has a benign outcome in a large majority of cases. We estimate that only 4% of the patients require intensive therapy. Didn't the CDC say that 6% were actually affected by its numbers? That wasn't the number, that was just all the number. And so we could be right in the same thing. If this is the real situation, why do the media and authorities do their utmost to create a climate of panic, thus provoking a true state of exception with several limitations of movement on the suspension of daily life and work activities for the entire regions? It says climate of panic. That's climate change. That's terrorism. Okay? That statement right there, what they're doing is terrorism. To rule by fear, intimidation, and dread, not the law, but fear, intimidation, and dread is terrorism. That's what they're doing right now. Two factors can help explain such a disproportionate response. First and foremost, what is a once again manifest here is growing tendency to use the state of exception as a normal governing paradigm. The executive decree approved by the government, quote, for reasons of hygiene and public safety, produces a real militarization of those municipalities and areas in which there is at least one person who tests positive for whom the source of the infection is unknown, or in which there is at least one case that is not connected to a person who recently traveled from an affected area affected by contagion. Such a vague and indeterminate formula will allow the government to rapidly extend the state of exception to all areas, as is practically impossible that other cases will not appear elsewhere. So let me just point out here, he says indeterminate. I've told you the PCR test is an indeterminate test, only pointing to antigen. So again, the vocabulary becomes consistent. Halfway around the world, he's saying the same thing that I've suggested that you need to rely on. He's showing how this integrates and shows you what the ramifications of letting these kinds of tyrannies and terrorisms happen. He explains in a very proper sense how you could adopt the language to say in your place it's the same. The tyranny is global. This brings us back to the relevance that silent notice is taken on the binding nature of the international health regulation, which you have to state in your paper, is non-binding, and because of the reservations, and notwithstanding that, the goals and the aspirational goals and recommendations are not binding. And therefore, the United States government acknowledges federalism and the focus on local state requirements, and you focus in on your statute requiring the duty. Let us consider the serious limitations of freedom imposed by an executive decree. And he goes through a list. And so here's your list of potential harms. Now, I'm not saying you make all that up. You just put that in your hip pocket, put that in your file, so you understand. There's another guy out in the world that realizes these things. If you don't have the words in your mouth, maybe this guy does for you, and you can start thinking about how you're going to reference it for yourself locally. He goes on to say, we might say that once terrorism was exhausted as a justification for exceptional measures, the invention of an epidemic could offer the ideal pretext for broadening such measures beyond any limitation. just what I told you, hindsight, Operation Hindsight 2020. This is what they were going to do. Because it was the, it puts our society to the wall, requires a very specific response, and if we don't, they have prerogative to, there is no limit. And none of you are really stepping up to make that, and there's a couple that are, and it's taking a while to, because of the type of remedy being chosen, it's taking just a little bit longer to put things together. But it can all be started with a letter to do the very same considerations this gentleman is talking about. The other factor is less disquieting is the state of fear, which the recent years have diffused into individual consciousness, and which translates into a real need for states of collective panic, for which the epidemic once again offers ideal pretext. And so we see the exercises that we mentioned in the IHR, you'll find, and then the other document that I didn't have the link for, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's another guidance that's been done. They talk about exercise in that, confirming exactly what Pompeo said, but that he's saying that this offers the pretext, which I would use that word, for what they're advancing. Therefore, in a perverse, vicious cycle, the limitations of freedom imposed by government is accepted in the name of the desire for safety, which has been created by the same government who now intervene to satisfy it. Fascinating statement. It's because they intervene in the United States of America because no one interferes with that claim. It's a self-inflicted wound, and we have all the power to shut it down, but we have to. We can't do it in silence. He goes on in another article later. That letter was written back in February. This one is Medicine as Religion. And this has hit me pretty powerfully in the fact that it just correlating all this, the WHO, the IMF, the sustainable development. You'll see the sustainable development is written right into the IMF condition. It's written into the other article that I didn't have a link for and didn't read from. Medicine is religion. Remember, the sustainable development, another name for it, is green religion. And so a religion is being foisted on you over yours, whether you have one or not. And a religion is being foisted on you even if you don't have one. And it's been known to be called the green religion. And he writes that medicine is religion. Now they've gotten special and what did exactly what I told you. If they get a health prerogative power, this is the worst of the religions relative to civil society. You'll see, and I think he states in this one, this is not science. This is not even medicine. This is politics, as I've told you over and over. This is what sustainable development is. Okay, so it's really consistent here. I've really appreciated this Giorgio Agamben's insight as translated through these websites. The science has become the religion of our time, that in which people believe they believe has been obvious for some time now. Now, I don't see how obvious that's been in the United States, but I guess they've seen it in Italy for a long time now. In the modern West, there have coexisted, and to a certain extent still coexist, three great systems of belief: Christianity, capitalism, and science. In the history of modernity, these three religions have often intersected, entering from time to time into conflict, and later reconciling in a different way until they progressively reached a sort of peaceful, articulated coexistence, if not a true and proper collaboration in the name of common interest. All those things just make my skin crawl, because it's all just the collaborative sense. It's all just the unity thing. It's never independent. What is new is that, he goes on to write, that between science and the other two religions, there has ignited, without our noticing it, the subterranean and implacable conflict, the successful results of which for science are daily before our eyes and determine in an unheard of way all aspects of our existence. This conflict does not concern, as happened in the past, theory or general principles, but so to speak, cultic practice. Indeed, science too, like every religion, knows diverse forms and levels through which it organizes and orders its structure to the elaboration of a subtle and rigorous dogmatic. There corresponds in practice an extremely broad and widespread cultic sphere which coincides with what we call technology. He's just not talking about technocracy here, folks. It's not surprising the protagonists of this new war of religions should be the part of science where the dogmatic is less rigorous and the pragmatic aspect stronger. Medicine, whose immediate object is the living body of human beings, let us attempt to fix the essential character of this victorious faith with which we must increasingly settle accounts. Understand, he says to human beings, that's humanism. And so I've got a concern of where he's coming in context, because my understanding is that humans are animals, and they're treated as animals, and they have no rights, they have no inheritable blood, and they're monsters by definition. And so we can, okay, so that should interest you. I hope he brings up now, starts to talk about certain things. He moves this whole medical thing into a religious cultic practice. And that becomes important because this is in the green religion identity, and it is attacking every other religion if you thought you had one. Even if you don't, they're attacking that. You think you don't have a religion? They're going to impose this upon you because you're a cricket. And you've heard today every power you have that it's local, and then the way this place is wired, all you have to do is enforce the local duty. You don't have to argue with them. It's either the evidence is there or it's not. My view is you don't have to write 191 pages of challenging mitigations, although you need to hold a reservation to do so in case they do prove that they did the thing right. They just didn't tell you, which is a fraud on its own, but that's not going to be a powerful fraud. Then you can go after whether the mitigation was reasonable, just, and everything that Mr. Kaladi up in Kanukistan, the attorney, the lawyer, the constitutional lawyer, says. It goes on here. I went down through this article. Talks about number four. The medical religion has unreservedly taken up from Christianity the eschatological urgency that the latter had let fall from the wayside. Already, capitalism is secularizing the theological paradigm of salvation, had eliminated the idea of an end of days, substituting it for a permanent state of crisis without redemption or end. And so he shows you and broaches the idea of this medical religion. I'm saying it's just reflecting the green religion underneath, which is the promotion of sustainable development, things sustainable. It is coming through the worst thing mankind has ever seen, and it's all relative to somebody figured out the weakness of your systems and then understood in hindsight how you use time you wouldn't respond, and they were right. And so you are being imposed with a religion, and you were supposed to have a freedom of religion in the United States anyway, if nowhere else. Let me move on to here, number five. Like capitalism and unlike Christianity, the medical religion does not offer the prospect of salvation and redemption. On the contrary, the recovery which it seeks can only be provisional, since the evil god, the virus, cannot be eliminated once and for all, but mutates continually and assumes every new, presumably more dangerous forms. Epidemic, as the etymology of the term suggests, demos, in the Greek, the people, as a body politic, and the polemos, epidemios, is in Homer the name for civil war, is above all a political concept, which is preparing to become the new terrain of world politics or non-politics. It is possible, however, that the epidemic that we are living will be actualized of the global civil war that, according to the most attentive political theorists, have taken the place of traditional world wars. All nations and all people are now in an enduring war with themselves, because the invisible and elusive enemy with which they are struggling is within us. And I would agree in some context, your cricketness is that enemy. You know, I've been imploring you to step out of that crickedness, imploring beyond your own self, get out beyond your own self. Anyway, a very fascinating discussion. I think he's pretty right on here. The idea that we're looking at a political condition is absolute. I've been telling you that myself. And the politics that drives it is now foreign, to the point you saw Iran speaking that everyone, all the countries have to give up their, it's expected that all countries give up their autonomy. In fact, the United States government, the United States of America, has no authority to do that. It cannot sign an agreement to do that. And you've heard that acknowledged in this IHR 2005. I would hope you take a bit of consolation a little bit that it is written in a black and white, an acknowledgement by what we think is a federal oppressor to have said, no, we have a different authority here and it's local. That's your call to come on stage, folks, is all I can say. COVID-19 countermeasures, protections are not absolute. I want to move on now. Now that you know that it's not binding, now that you know these vaccines are only suggestions and can't be bound and CDC can't do any more, if you go international, if you go foreign international, then you realize the state is the power. The CDC has none. Their input and the NIAID and Fauci and all these, don't fall prey to, guys. You have the power to say, no, you better just follow the law here. That'll protect us. But they have federal impositions you got to be careful of. And that I need you to know about this. It's COVID countermeasure protections are not absolute. It speaks to a law that was imposed years ago, also in 2005. Interestingly, the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act, which was enacted in 2005 and serves as the means of incentivizing contributions of much-needed resources in such times in crisis for health. This is the PREP Act. It has write-offs to the all companies that offer equipment to stop a health issue. Now, there is exceptions. I wanted you to see this article because that's what it's speaking to. You have to go down quite a ways in the article to start seeing it. It's a very narrow hole that you see that allows you some rights against the imposition and what? The bribery to produce for a fraud. If you see that here, that they have already ahead of you written off the immunities, your ability to have remedy, which I would challenge as a violation of law. They can't take your remedy at the state. This federal law would preempt state law. So that would have to be challenged as well. I want to point out, if you look carefully, you have to read as this thing comes on us, as Bill Gates funded a digital identity based on your vaccination. That's another product that would come underneath this. It's given carte blanche to come in. You're going to have to know, you really are going to have to know how to, what the words say, what to respond with, show how they're not binding, show that the duties weren't followed in order to start protecting yourself. I'm asking you to write a letter up front, start the so-called administrative process in letter form so that you have a body of record of evidence that they're not doing it properly. They can't impose a thing, that everything they're doing is not reasonable. They can't take good faith reliance. In fact, this act allows you to put a notice to take away what they thought was their protection. And this is why I always say, look for these things, because they're very important, that you're going to have that word in your mouth. You just can't say resist and do nothing more. You can't just say, I'm not going to wear a mask or protest. This is a different type of battle. They've put the capacity and infrastructure inside your system. I've been telling you about this for years. This is the opportunity we have now to out it and, I think, end it, if we could just get everybody to step up and defend themselves. I'm asking that you do. Grimner, thank you for what you do at reallibertymedia.com and the archives you provide and all the time here, the connection we get to go out, and I get to talk to folks. And UCY.TV, thank you, and the commenter over there. Thank you for Ackerman. Thank you, Mr. Ackerman. Thank you very much. And you, Sound Minds, thank you for doing what you do in the video and trying to keep up with what I'm doing here. And all you people at Minds and all, appreciate all your help and all your support and spreading the word. I'll be with you next week, Tech Diffs, or Nature Willing.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
A can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.